Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello and welcome to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Carr and very, very, very honored to be here with you today. Thank you so much for joining me and tuning in. Your energy really makes these shows happen, so I really appreciate you being here. And I want to mention that if you go to my website, which is theawareshow.com, we have been broadcasting for 18 years now, The Aware Show, on various platforms between KPFK and Hay House Radio and Gaia TV and all the great places that we broadcast. And we have now done our show on YouTube. A video version of it is also on YouTube. So check out my website, which is theawareshow.com, and you'll see all of those different shows, different guests, huge platform. It's a whole network. So go check it all out. Great consciousness lifting entertainment and conscious media right there. Under your nose. It's been there for a while. So, talking about this. Okay, so my guests today are talking about something called spiritual amnesia. And this could be any of the things that you've learned, maybe even listened to on The Aware Show. And they work, they're fantastic principles, and you forget them. And this could be anything from any of the wisdom practices that you've studied in the past, anything that really challenges and changes your idea of spiritual practice, and then you forget it and don't practice it. No, it's there, but don't practice it. Well, my guests today, Ron and Mary Holnick, have such a great background. They're both licensed marriage and family therapists. They are the pioneers that created the University of Santa Monica, which is also known to many as USM, which is an incredible university, essentially, that teaches the study and the practice, really, of spiritual psychology. And it's really a lot about the practice of spiritual psychology. Many people that I interview have graduated from USM because part of their coursework is to create a movement, either through a book or a study or practice or something like that, where it really helps you take what you love and what you learn and put it into an actual practice. They wrote a new book called Remembering the Light Within, a course in soul-centered living. So welcome to the show, both Ron and Mary. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having us, Lisa.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. We are both pioneers in this field and do it because we love it. And if we aren't growing ourselves, then our business isn't growing, right?
That's right.
So tell me what spiritual amnesia is in your words. What do you mean by that?
Well, spiritual amnesia is really the condition of forgetting our essential nature. And it's something that occurs almost for everyone who comes onto the planet. Just the fact of taking a body and growing up means that we are going to experience the veil of forgetfulness, and we are going to become identified with the ego, which sees things based on five sense reality and duality, good, bad, right, wrong. And you spoke of spiritual amnesia in another way, in that we may learn certain principles or spiritual practices, but sometimes just in the course of everyday living, we seem to completely forget that information and that awareness. And it really is because we are not only divine beings having and using a human experience, but we come with the operating system of the ego.
Another way that that we think of this, Lisa, is that we went into the theater and somehow got lost in the movie.
Yes. Where do you think this starts, though? I mean, I have a teenager, and I, you know, she's been raised in a spiritual household, and yet it's not a popular thing to do as a teenager.
No, it's certainly not.
Yeah.
No, it's certainly not. But, you know, having children, I don't know what your experience was, Lisa, but when babies come in, of course, there's just nothing but that incredible spiritual presence. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, people love to hold babies. They love to be around young children. And often we find our students recounting to us amazing things their very young children have said. But then generally, around the age of 5 or 6, they have the experience of the veil dropping and of the ego operating system really coming in pretty strongly. And part of it is because of what we refer to as spiritual curriculum. Mm. Here we are, we're souls, we take a body, but we come onto the planet really to learn certain things, to heal certain unresolved issues, and to share the gifts that we have. And yet here we are in the duality of the physical level, and so the experiences that we have and the interpretations that we make of those particular experiences tend to take us into the land of the ego.
And if you think about it, it has to be that way, because if we didn't have spiritual amnesia, let's call it that, there'd be no point to be here. I mean, why leave heaven to go to heaven? It wouldn't make any sense.
That's a good point.
If we're going to come into a place where we're going to learn and grow, and that's what the spiritual perspective is all about, we have to come in into that classroom. I mean, there'd be no point in my going on to second grade if I had mastered high school. I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense. So it's not a bad thing. It's just a condition that we find ourselves in order to learn and grow.
Well, the ego, if we could talk about that for a second, kind of keeps us safe in some ways. It not only keeps us safe from harm, but we somewhat try to fit in because our ego tells us that's our way of surviving. Not in a bad way, but if you stand out, then you could either become a threat or you get eaten. And that
yes.
It's such an interesting role the ego has. It's very interesting. Pulls us out.
The ego isn't bad. We need an ego in order to be able to operate in a five-sense reality that has polarity in it. In other words, there has to be a less than and a more than, otherwise there can't be an existence. You can't have the experience of light if there's no darkness. You can't have the experience of heat if there's no cold. So there has to be this duality in order for us to have physical level experience. So the ego's job is to operate in that reality. If we were here as souls with no ego, we probably wouldn't get very much done because we would just sit around all day in bliss.
And the ego really consists of the mind and the emotions, and the mind is a tool to be used in service to the heart, but for many, the mind really becomes the master, and tries to.
Right.
You know, when you think about it, we are conditioned with certain belief patterns that we take on based on our individual curriculum and our particular predisposition. So through the ego, we really create a lens of perception based on the filter of the belief system that we have. And then we find ourselves reacting to what's going on when it doesn't fit the way things should be according to our particular belief system or perceptual filter.
So the notion of spiritual curriculum is very important, because we, from the perspective of spiritual psychology, and let's talk about the word psychology for a moment, because psyche really means soul. If you look it up in a dictionary, you'll find that in there. But what we have done is we have taken psychology and we've turned it into something about mind and behavior. So when we talk about spiritual psychology, we really are bringing it back to what it was inspired onto the planet in the first place. My first teacher used to say psychology was inspired onto the planet because mankind forgot, or humanity forgot, why it was here in the first place. And we really have just simply found a way to return to what we are really all doing here, essentially, in the first place, as opposed to thinking that what we're here for is to get a better job and get a better relationship and earn more money and all of that kind of thing.
Okay, so tell me about USM and University of Santa Monica, and when you started it, and what was the inception? Why did you start a university of spiritual psychology?
Well, this is such an interesting question. Actually, we had come to California, and we had done a seminar called Insight One, and we met a spiritual teacher by the name of John Roger at that time. And about a week after the seminar, we had a meeting with him. At that time, we were thinking of getting married, and so we had a conversation with him about that possibility. And he said to us, your energies really match, and the two of you could do a lot of good work together. And personally, I think it would be a good idea. We didn't know at the time that it was very rare for him to give people recommendations with regard to marriage or personal relationships. And so we were married about 6 months later, and we were working together at New Mexico State University at the time. And we eventually it became clear that that was going to be too limited a context for us to work within. And so we left the university, and not too long after that, I had a dream that we were to start a school, and that it was a school associated with John Roger. And so I woke up very early one morning following this dream. I was out on our patio in our walled-in backyard there in New Mexico, and Ron came out and he said to me, Mary, what are you doing out here? And I told him about the dream that I had, and we went inside and had some coffee and determined that we would call John Roger to see if we could speak with him about this. And we made the call and heard back a little while later with a request from him that we come to meet with him, which we did. Mm-hmm. And I shared the dream, and he said, if you ever had the dream of starting a school and doing it the way you would like to do it, this is your opportunity.
See, we didn't know it at the time, but he had formulated a school called Koinar University, which means Mountain of Light. And so he just had the thing was ready for someone to come in. And so when we started to talk about it, he told us, he said, look, you're the first people to come forward with both the credentials and the consciousness. If you ever had a dream of starting your own school and doing it the way you always wished that you could do it, I'm offering you that opportunity. Well, how could we say no?
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow, that's so interesting that you felt that calling and you sunk right into that dream. Was it because you were operating at a certain frequency at that time, or a certain vibration, or in a certain question? Were you being anyone different then than you are now?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, Lisa. I think really we were following really the impulse of our soul. And I would say the only thing that I see as different now is that we have a lot more experience. We've had the benefit of many years now of spiritual practice, of working with students from all around the world. And so we have really learned so much through both of those processes that really the work that we do now, I would say, is more elegant. There's more leverage. People can move faster, can experience the resolution of their issues with more grace and ease, and wake up into the awareness of the love that they are.
It also, I think, has to do with the fact that because of the frequency we're carrying, we draw people to us that are on the same wavelength. And I think that's a very important factor.
On the same path.
People are either ready or they're not. I don't know how else to say it. They just know.
What does the program entail? It's a 2-year or 3-year program?
Well, we actually at this point are offering a 1-year program called Soul Centered Living, and it's a 10-month program that meets one weekend a month, and people learn the principles and practices of spiritual psychology in an experiential format with a group of other like-minded and like-hearted people, so it really becomes a community of support. And the classroom experience, we present information, and then we have processes or activities that the students engage in, so they get to have their own experience of it inside themselves. So they are presented with information and concepts, but we want them to have their own experience with them and find out for themselves how they work or don't work, as the case may be.
So, for example, let's say we were to share with you all about the process of listening from your heart, and we were to tell you how to do it, but then leave you on your, that would be the end of it. And in many schools, that's it. You get the information, and then you're supposed to use it.
Mm.
But we don't do that. We then say, all right, we're going to divide up. We do a lot of work in what's called trios and three-person processes. And so we have people facilitating each other in a specific way that we've designed so that you're going to have the experience of what it really means to listen from your heart. And then at the each of them, that process may easily go on for an hour. And at the end of it, then people stand up and share in the classroom, what was that like for you? What was your experience? Because words in and of themselves don't mean anything. It's only when you can pair a word up with an experience that that word has any real meaning. And so when our students talk about heart-centered listening, it's not just a concept. It's based upon actual experience, and it means a whole different thing.
Mm, so in there, now there's a 10-month program, and then is there also a longer program?
Well, we have a program that follows from that that's called Life Mastery and Soul-Centered Living, where students learn how to do the deeper work of healing their own unresolved issues.
Mm.
And they work with a significant relationship in their life that they find challenging. They work with transforming it. They also have the opportunity to do what we refer to as the healing of memories work, to systematically go through their life through the various age stages one at a time, and to be able to look at what was going on at that time, what experiences did they have, what remains unprocessed within them that they now have the awareness and the skills through which they can process it, experience healing, bring it to resolution. And then we have a third-year program that is, the title of it is Consciousness, Health, and Healing. And it explores in a very deep and dimensional way what is the relationship between consciousness, health, and healing. And we work with the various chakra centers. Again, this is a 10-month program, so we work with one chakra center per month. We work with IntelliKey. What is an individual's IntelliKey? In other words, what are the gifts they came to share? And what also is the awakening that they came to experience, to know themselves really as the presence of love. We work with the development of intuition in that program. It's very rich and dimensional, and you can see from what I'm saying that there's a progression to deeper levels as people progress through the work.
That is well thought out and addresses so many different dimensions once you graduate or you're done with the either the 10-month program or the 3rd-year program. You're probably a different person, which is
definitely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. No question. And this is part of what we have loved about doing this work through the university, Lisa, is that we get to know the students, we get to know their families, we know their lives, mm-hmm. and we really do witness the amazing blossoming of them in their being, of who they really are, the soul's nature. And also we get to see how their lives transform and the way they become light bearers in the world, and they do service.
Now, because this is just located in Santa Monica, you have you encapsulated a lot of this in your book, Remembering the Light Within, or can people come from anywhere?
Well, people can come from all over the world and have to take the program. But the book, Remembering the Light Within, really is designed as a course in soul-centered living so that people who might not ever be able to come to the university could experience some of this life-changing information. The way we've structured the book, at the end of every chapter, there's at least one practice that we recommend people do. And we say, read the book and then take 2 weeks to really practice this particular approach and allow yourself to have your own experience. And part of what we've been encouraging people to do, Lisa, is to gather together a small group of friends or like-minded people so that they can have a little study group, they can read the book together, they can meet every 2 weeks and talk about their experience with the practices. And the book has been designed sequentially. We start with some of the most foundational principles and practices. And as the person progresses through the book and the chapters, then they come to some of the more advanced work.
And the reason that we say that we call it a course is there are 26 chapters. If you take 2 weeks for each chapter, it would take you 1 year to complete the book as a course. And I defy anyone to complete the book as a course and not have a significant change in their lives in a positive direction.
Wow. Well, it does address so many things that people are challenged with in this world in terms of having a heart-centered experience. And one of the things that you mention here is this is one of the chapters that you have, but spending 2 weeks on this would be great. What you believe determines your experience. And you have a practice at the end of this, at the end of this chapter, and it kind of gives an example of what people are able to do and accomplish with this. It's almost like a workbook, which is fantastic.
It is. It is a workbook.
So your beliefs, you just to go into this particular chapter, you go into the practice of really examining what your thoughts are about specific situations, right?
Yes, and we give an example in the book having to do with a lovely professional woman who is experiencing a financial challenge in her business and what her belief system was and how she was able to work to really transform that conditioned belief pattern and really consciously evaluate those beliefs. First of all, identify them. For most people, they're outside conscious awareness.
Amazing. Yep, absolutely. So this could be more of a deep dive on some of these spiritual principles that, as you say, not even that we've forgotten them, but don't have a practical way to apply them back into our lives. So are you saying that these exercises need to be or should be practiced in order?
Well,
it's a good idea.
The book was written sequentially. However, you know, people will do it however they do it, Lisa, and that's really okay. There may be something that they recognize, I need this now, And so people will just follow their own natural inclination. But the book was designed to be sequential.
Okay. All right. And I want to know the difference here, what you explain between goal lines and soul lines. Tell me the difference of those.
Okay, that's a very significant and foundational thing to understand. And when we speak of the goal line, we're really talking about a person's life, and this is the way most people see the world. Life is happening out there. So we have a job out there. We have a relationship out there. Everything that goes on is going on out there. And we presume, or we assume, that what's going on out there is the determining factor of what is going on inside of us. However, if we stop and think about it for just a moment, if I ask you where is the experience that you have occurring, it's never occurring out there. It's always occurring inside of you. Mm-hmm. And so might it be possible, since it's occurring inside of you, to be able, rather than try to change something out there, might it be possible to go inside where that part of you that has that experience resides and change it directly inside of yourself, independent of anything that's going on out there in the world?
Can
and what we have found is, yes.
An example.
Yes, we can do that. We can do that. Mm-hmm. For example, people will run around going, I am upset because, or I am happy because, and this is the way most people were brought up to think. The assumption is that the thing that's going on out there is what's causing the inner experience I'm having. What if that's not true? What if what's going on out there is simply what's going on out there, and what you make of what's going on out there is what's causing your inner experience?
Mm.
So if something happens out there that, for whatever the reason, you don't like, you're not going to feel happy about that. And whatever's going on out there, if it's something that you do like, you're going to say, I'm happy because that thing occurred.
Mm-hmm.
But we're saying it's really an independent thing, and that's where the soul line comes in. Because the soul in and of itself is... there is no polarity. There is no good and bad. There is no right and wrong. All there is love. That is the essence of what we are. And, of course, this isn't a new idea. We've been being told that by saints and sages throughout history. But coming to have a technology that we can actually utilize in order to discover this for ourselves, that's relatively new. Up till this time, it's largely been things like meditation that might go on for years and years and years, and those kinds of practices. And what we have found is, no, we can assist people in moving into experiences where they can have that shift. Some of them, the first time they have the experience, they have the shift.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
So it's a very powerful technology.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it gives you, in a practice, if you can, of not assigning meaning to things that doesn't need to have a meaning. We could get very, very, very creative about something.
Yeah.
Let's take that example, by the way, is when we have, say, for example, started off on a journey, on a spiritual practice or whatever it is, and we hit big blocks along the way and bumps along the road and so forth, we tend to give those things a lot of meaning. Is there a technique that you teach for not wanting to give up when those types of obstacles happen, and how to be resilient and regain traction when you're faced with an obstacle?
It's for this very reason that we really encourage people to participate with a group. It's not unlike, let's say, any of the 12-step programs, in the sense that when you start to falter, to have other people there, and their job is to help you regain and help you get back on your path again.
To help you remember.
And just to help you remember and help you and just give you the strength and the courage and the positive reinforcement to just keep going, because the ego will not support you in doing this.
Yeah.
The ego is where all of the challenges occur. Not that the ego itself is bad. We need an ego in order to exist in a dualistic right wrong plus minus reality. So this is one of the main reasons why we love having large classes and having people come from all over, mm-hmm. because the support element is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Especially working in the, what did you call the Trillo groups or in threes?
Trios.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the other things that we emphasize strongly in our programs and in the book, Lisa, is the power of clear intention. And we encourage people to set intentions on the goal line, because our work is also practical. We are interested not only in people awakening, but also them experiencing the quality of their life improving. So we encourage people to set intentions on the goal line, but also to set intentions on the soul line. And we teach students processes that have to do with creating ideal scenes, but I think the most important thing really is to be associated with other like-minded and like-hearted people who, when you're down, they help you remember, and when they're down, you can help them remember that they are more than these challenging experiences, and to remember to apply the practices that can heal the unresolved material mentally and emotionally that really blocks us from remembering who we are as the presence of love, but also assists us in resolving the crystallized patterns within our own consciousness that continue to attract certain kinds of experiences to us.
Is there another? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, within the spiritual perspective, we will always draw to us the kinds of experiences that will tend to bring forward the unresolved issues that we have. That's why we're here. That's what we're doing.
To learn and to grow, absolutely, yeah. Now, are there, because you are so practice-oriented, which I think is fantastic, and this book is basically a guide, loosely based on the course that you are teaching at the University of Santa Monica and really allowing people to go through individual practices. Now, this particular one that I found that I loved is about reframing issues as blessings.
Mm-hmm.
So, can we talk a little bit about that, issues?
Sure.
And reframing as blessings, that's a tough one.
It's one of our favorites, too.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the whole thing about entering the spiritual context and seeing through soul-centered eyes and really recognizing that these challenging experiences that we have are not against us. They're not punishment. They're not evidence that we're a failure unworthy, but rather they are opportunities pointing towards unresolved material within our own consciousness. And part of reframing issues as blessings is, rather than getting upset and judging the experience and judging ourselves because it's a happening again, it's a shift into the spiritual context and really asking, well, what is my learning opportunity? What is being surfaced by this experience within my consciousness? How can I go about healing it? And what golden opportunity is really being presented to me to assist me in my healing and in my liberation? It's a paradigm shift. So rather than when bad things happen, are collapsing or going into anger and upset about it, we can we can rather look at it as this is a God-given opportunity. Doesn't mean that it's easy necessarily.
No.
To do the inner work, we have no illusion about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when people learn to stop judging and to start forgiving, I think it is really a happy day.
Well, a great example of this would be the experience that many people have in primary relationships, in family relationships, where somebody, your partner, let's say, does something that just really annoys you, and every time they do it, it just annoys you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either trade them in, so to speak, which is very popular these days, or you could explore the place inside where you have annoyance, find out what that's based upon, because there's going to be some rule what they are doing is violating. It's a rule that exists inside of you. They shouldn't be doing that, especially if they love me. They shouldn't be doing that.
They should be able to figure it out, right?
And they should,
on their own.
I shouldn't have to tell them. They
right.
should be able to read my mind.
Who does that? Yes.
Yeah. So as long as one has that kind of a structure to their consciousness, then they'll just keep drawing to them that very same experience or that same idea in other forms, in partner after partner after partner. But if they stop and say, what is it inside of me that gets annoyed? What's the rule that I have going in my consciousness that when they do that, it violates that rule? And whenever you have a rule, if someone violates your rule, you're going to be into what we call judgment. You're into the land of judgment. And that simply means making them wrong for violating your rule. So the nature of the work is to see if rather or not you can let go of the rule. And the process that we have really, I like to think we've perfected, to let go of rules, because rules are judgments.
When goes someone back violates, to meaning.
Mm-hmm. Someone violates my rule, I make them wrong. That's a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So what we work with is compassionate self-forgiveness. We don't forgive them for the terrible wrong thing they've done, because that just maintains the judgment.
Hmm. Right.
It just makes it more subtle. What we do is we forgive ourselves for maintaining that rule in the first place, and we just let it go. We just let it go. And what do we find when we're successful? They can do that very same thing. It just doesn't disturb our peace anymore.
But if it's something that is causing resentment or something that somebody shouldn't do, like I speak with many people who one person's the breadwinner and the other person doesn't make any money, and that person who's the breadwinner feels like they are being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, capable people that I speak with, and they're like, well, he doesn't do anything and he doesn't contribute. And so there's that. I mean, there's got to be a way for the situation to also get back into balance, right?
Well, it depends on what your definition of balance is.
Okay.
When Mary and I got married, we decided that the marriage was now the entity that we were both supporting.
Mm.
And whether one of us worked and one of us didn't, or we both worked, or we both worked but brought different amounts of money in, or maybe one person worked and one person stayed home and took care of children, that we were both contributing exactly the same amount of value to that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That was our rule
mm-hmm.
or our guideline.
It's really our agreement.
Or our agreement. And if you have an agreement like that with your spouse or your partner, you're never going to go into you just won't go into the whole thing about, well, they're not doing as much as I am, and therefore they're wrong. It does away with the whole right-wrong thing.
Yeah,
you know, and Lisa, those kind of dynamics that you just described, in the work that I've done with people over the years, sometimes it's fairly complex. Sometimes there are deep unconscious beliefs that people hold where they feel like they have to do it all themselves. They have become small-ass self-reliant. in a dysfunctional kind of way. And so they actually have an unconscious barrier against receiving.
Goes back.
These things are really kind of fascinating. Mm. And part of what I love is the process of helping people unravel what it is inside of them that this outer experience is reflecting back to them.
It does get very deep, doesn't it?
Yes. Mm.
Yes, and that's why we call it spiritual psychology. It's not about what's going on out there. It's about what's going on in here.
But what goes on out there very often is the reflection that is going to provide a lot of metaphorical information that properly utilized can be very, very helpful in terms of healing and freeing someone from these limiting interpretations.
Well, what would you say the overarching theme? Could you even say there's an overarching theme, like going back to that point you made about what meaning do you prescribe to something? So if it is a meaning of he doesn't love me because he doesn't make any money, that goes back down to your deep roots, right? But you could say it's meaning, right? Goes back to meaning?
Well, yes, it's a question of meaning, and very often what it comes down to is a deep underlying belief and feeling that I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy of the nicer things in life. I'm not worthy of a joyful life. My life is really all about penance and suffering and deprivation and unfairness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these patterns that we have in consciousness are fascinating. And I think part of being in a classroom where this work is being done within a group, part of what is so revelational, you become more aware of your own patterns, but you also witness the uniqueness of the patterns in consciousness that people develop because of their particular life experience, the conditioning that they had, and the judgments they placed, and the misinterpretations that they made inside their own consciousness.
As opposed to going to an individual therapist, of which you are both, both are therapists, and having a one-on-one experience, it is more accountable when you see other people having these same experiences, and then you can see it in yourself and you can see it in others, and that's probably one of the more transformational ways to really undo deep-rooted issues.
We really feel that way, Lisa. There's something incredible about a large group process, because when one person in the group shares in front of the group, there's healing that takes place for virtually everyone in the room.
Sure, sure.
And there's inspiration because we see people make courageous moves in their consciousness and courageously bring forward some of this deep, painful material.
Mm. So speaking of which, you mentioned letting it go. Sometimes in the spiritual world, we tend to put forgiveness above what really means something to us. Some people have a hard time with, quote, letting it go because there's wrong things that are done or wounds that are created. How do you suggest, and I'm sure you didn't just mean, oh, just let it go.
No, it's much more complex than that.
What type of technique can you do? In order to really
understand that from a spiritual contextual point of view, you have to really think about the idea of spiritual curriculum. Spiritual curriculum. That we all come in, we all come into our embodiment with particular things that we're here to learn. We're here to learn and grow. So if you have come in with a spiritual curriculum of, let's say, there's a particular kind of thing that happened to you whenever, or let me say it this way. The thing that you're here to learn is the nature of your inherent worth and value as a spiritual being. So in a context of duality, which this world is, you will draw to yourself experiences that are counter to that. And that may come in the form of, it's popular these days to speak of it as early wounding and things of that nature. But those really, that's the way that these patterns get seeded in consciousness, and not everybody has the same reaction or response to early experiences. I remember an encounter group I sat in on as an observer a long time ago, and everyone went around the room. This is when parent bashing was very big, and they were talking about how their parents screwed them up. And, you know, this person had this going on, and they were beaten when they were small, and this person had that going on. And everyone went around the room, and they came to this last guy, and he said, gosh, this is so strange. I had all of those same experiences going on when I grew up, but somehow I knew right from the beginning that all of those things were really my parents' issues and not mine, and so I never bought into any of it. Now, how did he know that coming in? So we have to take this notion of spiritual curriculum into consideration and stop thinking that it's these early experiences that caused these things, these patterns that we now have. It's not. Those early experiences happened so that the patterns that we're here to work on could get seeded in the consciousness. And sometimes they just flow through from past experiences, and we don't even remember anything that happened in this lifetime.
Hmm.
So when we talk about spiritual perspective, it's a big can that we're opening up.
But I think getting into this area also makes it so important to place emphasis on self-compassion, as a process of learning how to be with ourselves, how to relate with ourselves, not how to gloss over things and do spiritual bypass, because I've surely known people where that was what was operating, but rather to have the courage to go inside and do the deep inner work to bring forward the hurts that bind us and the judgments that we've placed against ourselves, against other people, and to really do the difficult but deeply healing and empowering work of letting those things truly come to completion, really completing them for the last time.
That enables you to, if you believe in reincarnation, not have to come back and do this all over again. It also enables the end of, like, after you've gone through and really liberated yourself from this deep wound or repeating issue, the freedom on the other side of that is so worth living for, too.
It's amazing.
Makes it very exciting to live. Yes.
It makes it very exciting because there truly is not only deep healing, freedom, but there is ultimately a kind of liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And when the person is living in the authentic self level, the level which is where we're more directly experiencing the energy of our soul, and people then have access to creativity, to inspiration, to divine guidance, and their lives really become quite magical in many ways.
Many, many years ago when I was with my first teacher, I said to her, I don't really believe in reincarnation. And she said, don't worry, that's not a problem. You didn't believe it in your last life.
Was that a joke? Were you getting funny with us?
No, she really said that.
That was a good joke. Now, in terms of simple techniques, do you have them, or is it really about doing the work from the book, step by step, and kind of in order, which is the way it's written?
Well, I mean, we could focus on any one of these, and, you know, we could say learn how to recognize when you're judging and set the intention to practice learning how to move to acceptance. We could talk about compassionate self-forgiveness, but one of the things I love about this book is it's laid out in a simple, very understandable kind of format, yet very empowering practices that people can try out, that they can journal about, that they can experience the results and experience how they work and the difference that they make. Just the simple practice of learning to do, seeing the loving essence and heart-centered listening. So simple. Basically, what it comes down to is my intention is to see with the eyes of my heart, to see with soul-centered eyes. My intention is to listen with my heart. Mm. Imagine approaching a conversation with a family member, a loved one, or a colleague, a friend, with that as your primary intention. I'm going to show up here residing in my loving heart. I'm going to look with the eyes of my heart. I'm going to listen with the eyes of my heart. We find the students categorically report that it invariably produces a greater feeling of connection, of closeness, of intimacy, and of meaning and purpose.
Hmm. Now, is that something that you can do if, again, let me use the example of, say, our political environment, and half of this nation is divided, and they feel that the daily actions of the president are infractions upon their personal freedom and unjust decisions. How do they just let go and think, lead with their heart when things are continually happening?
We wrote a blog about this a couple of months ago, Lisa.
It's called Are You Suffering from Post-Traumatic Election Distress?
Mm-hmm.
and we talk about the power of taking personal responsibility for the upset that what we're witnessing engenders or evokes within ourselves, and that we can actually be the most empowered to bring about change and to make responses to things that we don't agree with by recognizing if I go into negativity and againstness, I'm really just adding to the sum total of negativity and disturbance with what's going on, rather than if I will do the inner work to clear up the, shall we say, just spiritual pollution within my own consciousness, to deal with my own judgments, that then I'm going to empower myself to take constructive action. Just last week, there was a graduate who lives in Maine who came to visit us, and we had the most lovely conversation. She is going to be running for governor of Maine, and her philosophy politically is very much in harmony with what she learned here at USM. She was a lobbyist for many, many years in the legislature in Maine, so she knows her way around politics, but she also knows that it's time for a change, time for politics to be conducted more from a consciousness of service and a seeking of real solutions that are truly in accordance with the highest good of all concerned, as opposed to partisan.
One of the things that I thought was great, she said, when I do my campaigning, I am not going to say one thing about anything that I am against. I am only going to talk about what I am for and what I intend to accomplish. And I'm not going to make anybody wrong about anything that they've done. I mean, how refreshing is that?
Yes, yeah, it is. It's going to take a lot of effort, too, just because...
That's right.
Yeah, there's
That's
a lot right. of... That seems to be the common political rhetoric. Even
yeah.
people in the spiritual world that I know that have run for office wound up getting sucked into that. Mm-hmm.
And coming back to the election and what Mary was talking about, if you think about it, people who are upset about the results of the election, is that not just another form of I am upset because? So something has happened out there that violates a rule or a standard that they have, and theirs is a knee-jerk negative response of
fairness,
of judgment, mm-hmm. of wrong-making. Let's just leave it at that. It's just... You know, he's wrong, they're wrong, this one's wrong, that one's wrong. And as Mary said, if people really want things to be better, the last thing in the world they want to be doing is adding their wrong-making into the pool of the cesspool of wrong-making that is what they really don't want any more of. But people don't realize that.
Interesting. So now, does your university, is it accredited to you to get a degree from the University of Santa Monica?
We ceased doing the degrees last year after, I think, 36 years of it.
Because we realized, wow.
Yeah, we realized that it was limiting in that people have to have certain requirements to go for degrees. They have to have undergraduate things. There are things about different countries and things of that nature. And we said, let's just stop the degree business and let's just offer this to anybody in the world who wants to take it. And so that's where we moved to.
And that's a difficult decision to make and a hurdle to jump over.
It was a huge decision to make, mm-hmm. but part of it is we have really witnessed the evolution of consciousness over the course of the years that we've been doing this work, and we recognized that people were more ready and that in many ways the academic format was limiting and restricting us, and that we'll present our students much more with the essence, and we could provide them with online practices that they could do between the classes and a Facebook group where they could support each other, and that they could still have the benefit of experiencing the things that they learned in the classroom and the support for integrating them in their everyday lives.
Well, you've done
which to us is ultimately the blue ribbon.
And I'm sure that other things have come out of it. For example, the book. I mean, you basically, bring a wide range of teachings and daily practice that you teach in the program in the book, and you offer three different levels, which is fantastic, in the actual University of Santa Monica. So if people want to find out more, you can go to the name of the book is Remembering the Light Within. It's a Hay House book. It's a course in soul-centered living. There's practices that you can do in the book that are ones that you can read and reread and teach others and practice with others in a group environment. You can make it a Bible study type of thing, but not with the word Bible in it. And a lot that you can do with it. So thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you both. And everything you've done is quite amazing. I didn't know that you've had USM for 38 years.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for all that you've done for just basically elevating the consciousness and the planet. You have really contributed to that in a big way. So I appreciate
you
waking up people and giving them practical ways to practice spirituality and to bring it into their work. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and thank you for continuing to have the show where you present this kind of awareness and information to people. That in and of itself is a great contribution.
Absolutely.
We try.
We all try.
As you do, we too, yes. All right, well, thank you again. And again, was there a website that you gave?
www.universityofsantamonica.edu. That's the best place to get information about USM.
Okay, great. .edu. Okay. Thank you again, Ron and Mary Holnick. And the name of the book is Remembering the Light Within. It's a Hay House book. And thank you all so much for listening. I want to remind you to go to our website, which is theawareshow.com. You'll find Ron and Mary's information on there as well. You can link to everything for our guests this week and all of the other shows that we do as well on YouTube and other platforms. Thank you so much. And until next time, I invite you to stay aware.